today's attention. This has been a special commemorative edition of Earthwatch. Stay tuned, coming up, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. I'm Catherine Davis. Continue to tune in on Wednesday evenings, Thursday mornings, midnight, for an ongoing series of commemorative broadcasts featuring the late Robert Knight.
My wolf got something caught in its throat. I hope it wasn't a rabbit.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, oh yes, the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, Catherine Baker, or Kate Baker. We have both of them here. And we are going to be talking science fiction audio. Stay tuned. Hour of the Wolf movie review, air date June 26, 2014. Coherence.
Hear all the outtakes.
Cool. Take one. I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The name of the film we're discussing here is Coherence. That's a fitting title. Quantum physics plays a strong role in the story, and yet this film isn't so much about a coming together as it is about falling apart, about a crumbling of social niceties and relationships, about the price we might be willing to pay to avoid that. The film could well be called Disillusion, and it would have been just as suitable. A group of friends get together for a cozy little dinner party at a home somewhere in Los Angeles. They're professional couples, and a little bit of friction can be detected in the interactions, particularly in the host, Mike, an actor whose career hasn't quite gone as planned, who's played by Buffy's Nicholas Brendon, in a couple, Emma and Kevin, played by Emily Baldoni, and Maury Sterling, whose relationship is undergoing a bit of strain, and in the fact that another guest has brought with him a plus one in the form of Kevin's old flame. Still, no reason for stress. There's good food, good wine, the promise of some exotic drugs brought by yet another guest, and within everything, chat of a comet buzzing the earth and the strange effects it's having on electronics and possibly people. And then the lights go out. And that's where I've got to stop my synopsis, because part of the impact of Coherence is discovering the mechanics of what's going on as the characters do. Let's leave it at noting that Schrodinger's cat gets sighted, a mysterious black void is discovered, and color coding and a locked metal box become very important. But beyond just the quantum mechanics, what Coherence brings to the table is an incisive examination of a small subsection of humanity under stress and how their system of interaction eventually succumbs to chaos. Maybe the film should have been called Entropy. Anyway, this is the directorial debut of James Ward Burkett, who previously wrote the story for the surreal animated film Rango, and who here makes the most of a restricted canvas. The story pretty much takes place in one house, an appreciation for the Southern Californian social ecology, and a polished cast, which includes Elizabeth Grace, Lauren Mayer, and Hugo Armstrong, who improvise most of their own dialogue. The film's not perfect. The physics here
aren't as rigorous as they were in something like Primer, and not all of the behavior feels plausible, even when you understand the rules the characters are working under. But I like how the characters are expressed through their handling of this dilemma. This isn't just a gimmick for gimmick's sake. It's a neat, dark, mind-bending examination of the frailty of the social contract, and very welcome. And before I go, I just wanted to make note of another bit of weird time-space fun and games, this one going on in the Star Trek franchise universe. IDW recently sent me the first issue of Star Trek New Visions, a photo novella-style comic by John Byrne that's set in the original series universe, and it arrived right around the time that the latest episode of the fan-based Star Trek Continues video series was released on YouTube, and both happened to feature stories dealing with the Mirror Universe, that barbaric parallel universe that we first saw in the classic episode Mirror Mirror, and also a few times in other series, notably DS9 and Enterprise. Talk about synchronicity. Star Trek Continues episode, fairest of them all, gets props for the polish of the production. It really does look like classic Trek, maybe even a little better, and for Vic Magonia's almost spooky impression of William Shatner. But the story, completely set in the Mirror Universe, takes a too simplistic approach to showing how the bearded and even sexier Mr. Spock orchestrates a revolution after our Kirk, the nice one, has charged him with changing his brutalistic society. The producers had an opportunity for some really delicious political machinations in this Mirror Universe, and they completely miss it. John Byrne, meanwhile, in his photo novella, The Mirror Cracked, has more fun with the scenario, setting his tale in both universes and having the Mirror Universe Kirk slip into our dimension to wreak havoc on the USS Enterprise and hook up with some old adversaries. Byrne does have the same problem Star Trek Continues has in portraying the Mirror Universe in a suitably dog-eat-dog fashion. His storytelling is more comic-oriented with a cute but distinctly un-Trekkian ending. Not that that's bad, just different. And I think I would have preferred to see actual artwork instead of this photo montage stuff that takes images from the original series and reconfigures them to tell the tale, sometimes with completely new computer-generated settings. It's neat-looking, but feels awkward in places. The story's fun, though, and not a bad way of extending the original series universe, particularly for hardcore fans. You know who you are. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at CineFantastic Online. Check out what you missed by going over to CFQOnline.com.
And thank you, Dan. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I didn't hear the review, but I have wonderful people in the studio here. And we were talking about Radio Free Albemuth, which opens up this Friday at the Quad Cinema in New York. And I think about 10 theaters. This is a movie based on a novel by Philip K. Dick, and I would say, as for faithfulness to original material, this movie gets an A, maybe even an A+. I had issues with the film, but if you are a Philip K. Dick fan, if you are Jonathan Lethem or somebody like that, you must go see this movie, because it is really... here's a good way to put it. If you like the film A Scanner Darkly, did you see that one?
I have, and it was... I liked it a lot.
I liked it a great deal. If you liked A Scanner Darkly, you're likely to enjoy Radio Free Albemuth.
Good suggestion.
And I think that's... and the director said that during the interview I conducted with him on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be broadcasting that probably next week. The director's name being John Allen Simon. And we did about 1 hour.
Perfect.
But that's not this week. Now, first of all, I have to say that while we have an audience in the room, we also have at least one really happy fan. And we're not turning it off because even though it's making noise on the air, this is a warm room. Would you?
It's a very warm room. But yeah. I had the air conditioning blasting on the way down here, so this actually feels good.
Yeah, but from cold to hot and hot to, you know, you're going to get it.
Right.
Yeah, it's not good. We need that air. We need that air so that we can be on the air.
Okay.
And we're mostly talking this morning, right? We're not doing any reading. We're just going to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about reading.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. Kate Baker is... She is not a radio talk show host.
I'm not.
But you are. Okay, bear with me. Have you ever heard me on Lightspeed? You know that I'm now the host.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and I am trying. I think I finally found my voice.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing radio all 47 years. This show for 43.
Right.
Yes. We have some... People are looking at me like, yeah, you're lying. I was 2 years older than you, young lady, when I started working here. It's true. I was 13. I mean, I was answering
phones. That's impressive, though. On a level also, yeah.
I was answering phones. But, mm-hmm. Okay, I tell the story all the time, but I have to, just so I can boast, because it's my show. I can. When I came here because I was a listener, mm-hmm. and they were asking for volunteers to answer phones. And we had a drama and literature department. Our music director in the early 60s was a fellow by the name of Anthony Boucher.
Okay.
Now, not every listener out there knows who Tony Boucher was, and that was... You're giving me a look like you don't know?
I don't know.
Okay. He created a magazine called the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. He is co-founder.
It's late. It's 1:30 in the morning. I'm sorry.
He is co-founder. This is where you're going to get shamed. He is co-founder with Damon Knight.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Do I have to finish
this
sentence?
You don't have to finish the sentence.
Okay.
I've been up for a while. I'm sorry.
I mean, he died in like 1964, but he is a co-creator of A Place Where You Work.
So yeah. Don't fire me, Steven.
He's not. So I was talking about Neil, but anyway. Stephen Gould didn't know who he was either. I haven't seen him in a while. He recorded a show at my house about 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and another one when Jumper came out. And he is a lovely guy. I like him.
Yeah, he's a great president
and,
as well.
And his wife, Laura.
Absolutely.
She's a fine, fine writer. Laura Mixon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I won't want to compare it to another name because then I would have to talk about a former president, but Mixon, M-I-X-O-N, and Stephen Gould, no relation to Stephen J. Gould, who I have been told I resemble. So anyway, Charlie Pellegrino
mm-hmm.
keeps saying, you know, looks at me and says, you know, I used to work with Stephen J. Gould, the famous, scientist.
Right.
Biologist or something along those lines. Wrote some great books like okay. Panda's Thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. Anyway, Baird Searles was the drama and literature director. When I came here, he was bringing people in to do radio dramas. And at that time, there was a fellow by the name of Samuel R. Grandmaster. No, Delaney.
Who is awesome.
Chip Delaney
yes.
was the first person that I worked for here.
Wow.
At WBAI. The other people who were hanging out, writing scripts and stuff,
mm-hmm.
were named Theodore Sturgeon, Thomas M. Dish, and Joanna Russ.
So you had a horrible experience, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when people like Dave Hartwell say the golden age of science fiction is 13, I say, oh, that was me.
Wow.
Because I was 13. So mm-hmm. I just like to give that background. Now, if listeners out there don't know who these people are, you have a wonderful experience ahead of you because you get
Absolutely.
To read them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for people who think that all of a sudden only now women are coming into science fiction, read Joanna Russ.
Mm-hmm.
Read especially her short stories like When It Changed, a Nebula Award-winning story, and 1973.
Mm-hmm.
and The Female Man and Chip Delaney, Samuel R. Delaney, read anything by him. But the masterwork is Dahlgren. You may not find it easy to get into. It's like reading James Joyce.
Okay.
And Tom Dish, read his short stories. And if you like to get... Oh, if you're a young person, read The Brave Little Toaster or watch the Disney movie. Which was... Yeah,
I'm pretty sure you've seen that. I thought when you were little. Sorry.
We have a youngish audience here.
Yeah.
And if we had a good signal here, they'd be live tweeting the show.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope. Or Instagramming us. But anyway, the director of The Brave Little Toaster was John Lasseter.
Right, Pixar, right?
Who was fired for making the movie The Brave Little Toaster and now runs all Disney animation.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he was Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve Jobs installed him at Disney.
Right.
Jobs was on the board of Disney at the point where he was fired from Apple. And he joined Disney and he bought Pixar. I think that his greatest accomplishment, years from now when they say Steve Jobs, they'll say, Pixar! I really do.
You don't think it'll be a part of, like, you know, the Mac or the Apple, iPhones?
I think that they will have their place in history.
Right.
But I don't know that in 100 years people are going to be using that technology.
Mm-hmm.
But in 100 years, I think people are going to be
watching
Toy Story.
Yeah, or the crying at the first 10 minutes of Up.
Oh, God. Don't get me started. So the first 16 minutes, I know it exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, that's all you need to see, and it's four hankies.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking.
It really
and beautiful.
Is.
Yeah.
And then there's a, near the end, then it turns into a standard movie, but there's a lovely moment again at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But the first 17 minutes of Up are some of my favorite 17 minutes in cinema.
Absolutely.
Period.
Absolutely.
Bar none.
None of the kids got it in the audience, but the adults were all crying.
Oh, I went with a young lady of 10.
Okay. She got it?
And she got it.
Oh, that's good.
She got it. She was just she wasn't crying. Her jaw was open saying, what?
Yeah, what just happened here?
She actually said, WTF? She actually, like, in the entire audience, some of them are crying. Is great.
I have to be careful now at movies because when I bring my children, they always look over at me at pivotal scenes and they're like, is she crying? Is she crying yet?
Mm-hmm.
We found that happened with How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Really?
Yeah, we
I
cried
haven't
a
seen
lot.
It yet.
Yeah. There was some really great moments
two
in there.
Thumbs up. You know, if you feel that you must say something, I don't have a problem with it. It's just that you need to get near a mic if you're going to do it. But I told you, this is a very loose environment, okay? And if you feel that you must say something, get next to your mother, where I've got another microphone. Either of you. Oh, the looks. They're giving each other sisters, young sisters,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've got a yet younger one, don't you?
No, I have an older one.
Oh, an older one.
Yes.
Oh, too old for radio.
Too old for radio. Off exploring the world at this moment.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So he's doing well.
So it's the right time of year, actually, to be doing this
yes.
in the summer.
Yes.
Yeah. So, getting back on track.
This is gonna how it's gonna go, right? We're gonna
and
buy something.
How I am. And it's like, and you know, any guest who like even mentions Doctor Who or anything, that's the end of the show. It's all I talk about. But anyway, this is very relevant
mm-hmm.
because in the late 1950s, David Sarnoff, who owned NBC, declared that radio was dead. Those are the exact words he used.
Mm-hmm.
And all radio drama stopped.
That's very
and
sad.
And storytelling on radio stopped, except for WBAI and Baird Searles.
Okay.
That person who I mentioned, who I was interning for. Baird was also, by the way, the movie reviewer of Galaxy magazine and the book critic of the magazine of fantasy and science fiction.
Gotcha.
The Tony Boucher connection.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually has his place in science fiction history. Sadly, he died, 20 years ago. And his partner, today would be called husband, Martin Last,
mm-hmm.
was our, would you believe we had a poetry department? Oh, It was just him. But nevertheless, I mean, and what did he do? Poems and songs of Middle Earth.
Poetry is very underrated. Everybody doesn't like, well, not, I shouldn't say everybody, but there's a great majority of people, you say the word poetry and science fiction, you put them together, they're like, ah, oh, running screaming from the room.
I have never gotten it.
Okay.
But I nevertheless can appreciate it.
There you go. That's what I'm looking for.
And I appreciate the people who do like it.
Mm-hmm.
And what some of them do with it. But I have to say, outside of the science fiction circles, with the exception of a few poets, for the most part, I don't care for it. But I found a few people, Ferlinghetti, I love Ferlinghetti, because he doesn't take it seriously. Because he knows that the point is to have fun.
Yeah.
And that's good by me. Problem with a lot of poets are there. You know. Very, very, what in science fiction fandom they call Sirhan. Okay, so, back on track. Baird kept the spoken word of science fiction alive. In 1972, I used his wonderful voice,
as deep baritone.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, he could rival the person I work with, Stephen Rybnicki, you know, for that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for that wonderful, sonorous voice. And we did the Council of Elrond, which is one chapter out of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, my. Is that, can you get that anywhere?
Through me, yes.
All right.
I broadcast it every December, but I will send you a copy.
Please do.
And Baird did the reading, and he said, we have to find out some pronunciations, because this included actually reading in Orcish, because this is where they discovered the nature of the ring. This is actually a self-contained chapter. You don't have to know anything about Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit.
Right.
In order to read this one very long chapter, which the movie gives like 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really fair because what Jackson
You have
does.
My axe.
Basically, yeah. But what he does is he takes the story and he tells it chronologically. It's what Jackson does in the movie. Whereas in the book, it's all flashback. And the flashback all occurs in the Council of Elrond.
Mm-hmm.
So I produced that along with Margot Adler and Dave Marks. Margot created Hour of the Wolf and today Slums. She produces and reports for All Things Considered.
I know.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that show?
Let's not even. Okay. There's another story there. I'll tell the briefest way possible. In 1973, after Margot started Hour of the Wolf, she was accepted to Clarion Science Fiction Writers Workshop.
Ah, another writer's workshop I have never heard about.
Yeah, and it's 6 weeks long. I couldn't afford to go, so I had a choice. Bake over Margot's show called Hour of the Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
The Clarion, and I took the road less traveled.
And here you are.
And Margot, you should start writing SF. I got her to Lumicon, at least. I mean, she's been affiated. That's not in science fiction for you people. It means getting away from it. Which in science fiction means the opposite of what you would think it means. So it's because of Clarion. And Margot. And Margot left BAI to become one of the founding, one of the first people at NPR.
Right.
Along with Neil Conan, who worked with Baird Searles. All those people, the core of NPR came
out. It's a small world.
Well, they took the best, and we were that. I'm not joking. We were. We really were. In the 1970s, we were the number one most listened to FM radio station in New York City, the largest media market in the world.
That's something to be very proud of.
We were. Anyway. That's why I keep going on. I remember that you young.
Back in the day.
You young. In my day, you would have never gotten away with that. You can say any of those words. And we did, and we went to the Supreme Court. But anyway, So, Bear gives me a phone number to call. How do you pronounce this word? Gandalf. And I call the number. And it's like Oxford University. And I say, okay, extension, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the phone picks up Tolkien.
What?
Yeah. I was recording the call, too. I have this tape. And I said, Professor Tolkien? Yes. Hi, I'm calling for Bear Stearns. Oh, him again.
Oh, no.
We're trying to figure, doing Council of Elrond. He said, yes, I know. How do you pronounce G-A-N-D-A-L-F? And he said, Gandalf. I said, excuse me? Gandalf. It rhymes with, like, health. As in, half sixpence. So in American, it would be Gandalf. That's what I said. That was my whole conversation. So that's how I got to meet on the phone Tolkien. He died the next year.
Oh.
During WorldCon. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point is that we have always kept the spoken, and that's one person narration.
Mm-hmm.
Only we called them readers.
Right.
And we continued doing it, and we were the lone voice in the wilderness. This radio show, which used to be on 5 days a week, and Thursdays and Fridays were the science fiction shows. Mm-hmm. And Margo would come in and out, and I would have various co-hosts and stuff like that. And then I went down to 2 days a week, then I went down to Fridays, and then I was moved into Saturdays, kicking and screaming, which turned out to be my best time slot ever. And now it's all science fiction.
Right.
Except when it's not. I like to play music sometimes. It's radio. And it's free-form radio. I can do what I like. So, the point is that on this program, for all these years, we have either been reading stories
mm-hmm.
by writers.
Right.
And the answer is no, but we don't do it anymore, so don't tell writers beware. I'd usually write the writers, and they were usually more than happy to let us just read their story on the air at 5 a.m., because I would be sure to tell listeners, this book, that's from a book called blah, blah, blah. You are going to buy all the books from this person.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no competition. There was nobody else recording or broadcasting. But for the most part, I have the writers reading their own stuff.
Yeah. I was here doing that.
That's right. Oh, and we had a Clark's World Day. We have to do another before.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Before the end. Or else in New York, another New York Review of Science Fiction reading.
Wait, go back. You said before the end.
Let's not go.
Let's not be fortune tellers.
You know, it's, you know, have you seen the Four Horsemen on the, as you drove
no, I did
up
not.
Sugar Hill
I
here
saw
in
lightning,
Harlem? Okay, you saw lightning. And then if you'd look carefully, you would have seen Four Horsemen. It's awful. It's really awful.
Are you sure it wasn't Gandalf?
With Shadowfax, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, might have been.
Leading the Rohan into Helm's Deep.
Well, yeah, it might have been. It might have been. Okay, then before the attack, which will win. And no, I don't have hairy feet. But anyway, Kate Baker is. There are a lot of podcasts now. I was always dreaming that I would work for a book company and produce spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was hiring. And after about 1985, I got fed up and I quit trying to do that. And I had actually gotten a job in the private sector,
mm-hmm.
mostly writing for computer magazines.
Right.
And being one of the first people online. I met my partner, Barbara, online in 1981. In 1981, most people didn't have computers.
No.
But I met her online then. So anyway, we didn't meet in person for another 5 years.
Isn't that funny how that works out?
Yeah, you know, it was just a BBS, what they call a bulletin board service.
That's what a lot of people do now. Nope. You know, we're all Twitter friends, and then we finally meet years down the road at conventions.
Yeah, yeah. It was, in fact, the equivalent of a meetup
mm-hmm.
that we used to call the meaningless hangs
yeah.
that we actually met at. So, right when I gave up is when everybody, when all the book publishers, our drama and literature director at that time, Richard Harris and Sharon Matlin, went to Random House, and as far as I know, are still running it.
Mm-hmm.
And audiobooks became a field. The word was born.
Yeah.
Audiobooks, right in that era, right when
very expensive and quit. Large CD collections worth of audiobooks.
Yes, exactly. And then with the advent of the internet,
mm-hmm.
you know, a bad thing happened. Print went away. But a good thing happened is that some of the best science fiction coming out today, and I'm a short story fan,
mm-hmm.
is coming out online.
Right.
Which brings us to two things. Number one, Clark's World.
Yes.
Run by Neil Clark. It's on Arthur C., just the last name in common, and otherwise...
very confused.
Very, very, very different people, I'm glad to say. Because I knew Sir Arthur, so, mm-hmm. lightly. I knew him slightly. Met him three times. But,
yeah, Neil is the best. He's probably
he really
the,
is.
Yeah, he's family at this point.
Mm.
So.
And the, but what came along with that were the readings of the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And there are basically three methods. Method number one is what I have been doing is bringing writers on the radio
mm-hmm.
to read their own work. Writers
right.
are not necessarily the best readers. But I will maintain, and I had a whole long, I was doing a workshop at Catclave quite a few years ago, and Neil walked in.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into this most, I wish I'd recorded, it was such a wonderful discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We had opposite beliefs. There was not an argument. Over.
Isn't that great when discourse goes like that, where you can actually say, I'm standing here and you're standing there, and we're not yelling at each other about it?
No, we're not yelling at all.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, I understood everything he was saying, and he was right.
We need more of that.
And I think that he understood what I was saying, and
mm-hmm.
he liked what I was saying as well.
Absolutely.
The one thing that we disagreed on was the... whoops. This is going to get me into trouble. The music. But anyway.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. It's always been an ongoing thing.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. So now you have podcasts,
mm-hmm.
and podcasts come in two flavors. They do not generally involve the writer reading their own work unless it's somebody of the quality of Ellen Kushner or Mary
Correct.
Robin Eckwall
yes.
or Neil Gaiman, you know, somebody who's every person I just named has worked in radio and they are all superb
mm-hmm.
in their own right.
Right.
But outside of my show, nobody's asked Rick Bowes to read or Jeff Ford or Joanna Russ or, you know, some of these
right.
people.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to work with writers to help them be at their best at signings, at bookstores. And,
of course.
On podcasts and on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the narrator.
Right.
Now, that's really, from my point of view, a new word. It was reader.
Mm-hmm.
To me, a narrator is somebody in
Well, aren't
a,
they interchangeable?
No. Not in my head. And
In my day,
a narrator is in a full, what they now call a full cast audio.
Okay.
Which we used to call radio drama.
Right.
The narrator is the one who says, he knocked on the door.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see where you're coming from.
That's
so you're
the
going
narrator.
With a very technical definition.
It's the
okay.
narrator of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an omniscient
right.
narrator. It may be a first-person narrator. Richard Dreyfuss did a fabulous reading of Heinlein's By His Bootstraps, in which the narrator... There are about 20 characters,
mm-hmm.
but of course, the spoiler alert, the trick of the story is being time travel kind of stuff. He's all the characters.
Right.
He pulls the same thing. Heinlein pulls the same thing in all you zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And Dreyfuss did all of it.
I actually haven't heard that. I have yet. You've given me some great suggestions so far tonight.
I will get that for you because
oh,
it was done for
amazing.
Our LA station.
Mm-hmm.
And by total coincidence, The producer of that was Stephen Rudnick.
Oh, okay.
A producer of it. There was another person, a Russian fellow who was actually given a Nebula Award by Paul Levinson.
Okay.
Paul's been on my show how many times?
I love Paul.
But where's mine? I haven't even ever gotten a Hugo after doing this for nomination. I don't want the Hugo. I just want nomination. anyway.
You should start a campaign. I didn't say that.
Yeah, you know, I now know that. That one actually has to campaign for.
Well, it's frowned upon. It's like this weird sort of.
On the other hand, yeah. I mean, yeah. On the other hand, more people know the reading series to curate, where we get 30 to 40 people showing up than people are aware of Hour of the Wolf, which has been on the air since 1972.
Right.
And broadcasts in its day to well over 100,000 listeners. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 30 people versus 100,000. Go figure. But it's not in that community.
Right.
I'm broadcasting to people in Dunkin' Donuts and cab.
Hi, Dunkin' Donuts.
And cab. Well, yeah, I've got mine over there. And cab drivers. And
hi, cab drivers.
That. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hi, people who stumbled out of bars.
with luck. Speaking of which, by the way, this is WBAI New York. Let's have to do that once an hour, vaguely. And this is also, if you're listening properly, WBAI.org. Assuming that you're listening on your computer or something. I know we have listeners from Eastern Europe, because I've actually gotten Skype phone calls.
That's fantastic.
It's wonderful. I love it.
Well, then, can I say something real quick?
Yeah.
Hello, Clark's Royal Citizens. I hope this evening finds you well.
I know it's almost morning, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I guess. Well, it depends, I guess, where you are, right? If you're in Eastern Europe, it's almost morning.
So there have come to pass to be a few different things.
Now, yes.
I have recently taken over as host and only host, although I do the post-production, which means I do the editing.
The fun stuff.
I enjoy the hell out of it. And I got an email once from John Joseph Adams saying, do you know how to edit people reading? It's like, do you know how to put together a book? What kind of a question is that, JJA? It's like almost offensive. Ooh, wow, that's a great sound effect. Listen to that.
You set for a production.
Yeah. So anyway, so I took over from Raj Khanna, who had been doing the work. But Raj has to do things like write brilliant fiction.
He's also doing narration as well, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's on ACX, which is an Amazon.
Oh, yes. Very
exchange.
Familiar.
Yes. Okay. As are you.
Yes.
Yes. So now there are these various podcasts. Now, the way that Lightspeed Magazine, I also edit Nightmare, but Jack Kincaid is the brilliant host of that.
Right.
And I am now the host of Lightspeed. And I just do a hello, everybody, and welcome to blah, blah, blah. The story you're about to hear is blah, 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 and so on and so forth. Then there are, there's a trilogy of pods, which is Escape Pod, Pseudopod, and...
Put Me on the Spot Pod.
And Put Me on the Spot Pod, exactly. Put Me on the Pod Spot.
No, it's like horror, science fiction, and then fantasy.
Yeah. But it's the same people who produce...
I'm totally forgetting what it's called, but I know it's hosted by Alistair Reynolds.
Right.
Yeah.
And Merle Lafferty was doing some
of it.
She just guest hosted Lightspeed because we just finished Women Destroy Science Fiction. Which...
Big shout out to Christy, the aunt.
Yes, but I still did the mixing.
Awesome.
And it actually, I was very surprised that they weren't going to give me or Jack and Kate or the other guys who worked on it. Out of the 8 stories, four were narrated by men, and rightfully so. When you have a story by James Tiptree Jr.,
right,
whose real name is Alice B. Sheldon,
yep,
the story is nevertheless written from a male point of view.
Right.
And you need a male narrator.
It's all about writing, right? The women writing it. So it doesn't matter what the perspective was, right?
Yeah, but it was also that the women were producing and editing.
Gotcha.
I didn't edit those. I didn't do the Ninth Speed, but I still have to mix. And I had to, and Murr Lafferty was sending me the intros and outros. I had to edit those and mix those in. And finally, the last week, which is this week, I finally got, I think, a really cool sound. But unfortunately, I take over next week and just finished a wonderful Adam Troy Castro story.
Oh, very cool.
Read by Stefan Rudnicki.
Excellent.
And Gabrielle DeCure was the producer of The Women Destroy Science Fiction. And they've hired people with names like Claire Bloom Benedek and... I am forgetting her name, but her real last name is Card, as in daughter of
A
writer. Who's,
I know who you're talking about.
Blanking on her name. She's really good. Her father, when he was at Brigham Young University, did something like 100 radio dramas.
Wow.
So he's actually very good at that. And so there you have the actors.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones are, I would call most of the other ones, like Starship Sofa and all that, are readers.
Okay.
I think I am going to throw this out at you. And
yeah.
I hope that you're not going to throw anything back at me.
Where's the fun in that?
Oh, there are a lot of people who are. I maintain that you are a talk show host.
Okay.
Just like I am here.
Okay.
That there is something when we hear Kate Baker come on for Clark's World.
Mm-hmm.
It's, hello, this is the first week in June, and we're doing this and all that. Got some really cool letters from a couple of folk, and I wanted to do a shout-out. And, hey, don't forget that, you know, you're getting this for free, but if you come to the website, you can do that. So let me now read you a story by one of my favorite. This is what you do.
Yes, it is.
And
but why do you have to put a definition around it? It seems like it's sort of an amalgamation of lots of different things, right?
It's a style. It's not a definition.
Okay.
I am naming the styles.
Okay.
And the way that you read also, and this is another unusual thing, you are the sole reader for Clark's World.
Yes.
Doesn't matter what the story is.
Right.
Because you are brilliant at interpreting the story.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And by the older definition, I'm a decent reader. You are a great reader. I'm decent. And there are a few that I'm very proud of. But, I mean...
Listeners, you can't see my blushing right now.
But, yes, they can. they took
Where's
the camera
the
away.
The camera's not here anymore?
You see that we have all these monitors. There's one that's blinking black and blue. That's us. So it's not working.
That's great.
BAI people, they see a camera, they go, that's the NSA! And they take it.
You know. Yeah, so if it gets quiet in here, call the police.
When people are on the air here, people do call the police. But anyway.
Oh, what?
Happened. It's happened. It has happened. More than once.
That's fantastic.
But if only it were. So there are these different ways of approaching the way you read. And this is something I've also discussed with Stefan.
Mm-hmm.
That I notice that other people will say, hi, I am your Murr Lafferty, says, I am your narrator.
Right.
Oh, no, actually, no, she was the guest host. But somebody else will say, this story is such and such, narrated by such and such.
Mm-hmm.
I am sorry, folks, but I cut out your byline because the host will have introduced you.
Right.
You're now about to hear... such and such by Adam Troy Castro, read for you. And I say, no, you see, that's the difference. I say, read for you
okay.
by Stefan Rudnicki or Paul Baymer, mm-hmm. or you know this actor or that actor. They're really not narrating; they're performing.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work at a talent agency, and we were very big on those definitions as well at that time. So,
well, it's interesting that we're on this sort of conversation track because Bud Sparhawk. He came to me after he first met me when we started working together at CIFWA, and he said...
CIFWA is the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. Bud Sparhawk is the...
CFO treasurer. Now, because of the... Yes.
Oh, because of
the reincorporation in California.
That's right. Yes.
So, but there's a funny story all on how we met. But he came to me after, you know, we had talked for a little while. And
he's a great guy.
He's an amazing writer. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. But he came to me and he said... The difference between what you do and what other people do, some people read stories, you tell a story.
Yeah,
so, and I was like, wow, that's really awesome that you say that.
And that's very true.
Right.
I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. And others would as well. Have you listened to other podcasts? The Evil Competition?
No, I don't let her.
No. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Way to go, Mom.
She's an avid book reader.
Well, I have listened to other podcasts.
As have I.
And I work on a sister or brother podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use the word competing because we're not.
We're not.
We're not.
I think we're community, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you like the New York Review of Science Fiction readings that I produce, you will loathe the awful work that Ellen Datlow and Matt Kressel, the Evil Competition.
No,
I recorded the Lucius Shepard Memorial thing. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
I have a problem going to their readings now because they're on Wednesday nights and I'm on the air Wednesday
right.
nights.
Right, it's a lot to do.
Do both. So Gordon Lindsner mm-hmm. records them for me, and they're going to start putting them online. And I'm really upset about that because I wanted to do it,
mm-hmm.
but Gordon and Matt have the time and all that, so they're going to get to that.
Yeah, I think despite all the differences that are going on in the science fiction fantasy community, as far as you know. A lot of the growing pains, we still are a community, you know, and that's the support that I really, you know, gravitate to is I was listening to Murr, I was listening to Scott Sigler, I was listening to Cory Doctorow when they were first beginning. I was at Dragon Con watching those, you know, giants on a panel and saying, how can I improve what I'm doing?
Cory's a lot of fun, but Cory reads way too fast. He has some meaning calls and all that. And Cory should really... Rule number one. Would be narrators, readers, and writers allowed read slower.
Slowly, yes.
Yeah. Rule number two, blah, blah, blah. Rule number three, read slower.
Well, as Mary Kowal says, she said...
She and I did this in chorus once.
Yeah. She's like, if you feel that you're reading too slow, you're doing it perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You really... because, as I tell people when they come on the air to read, when they're writers and not a reader or narrator like mm-hmm. you, and this is exactly what you get right, and a lot of other people in the profession get wrong. The reason somebody is listening to you is because there is a voice inside of them that says, tell me a story.
Yeah.
That's why they're tuning
in. It's a very intimate thing.
You can't get more intimate into somebody's headphones.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be, like with radio, it was, we're in your living room at mm-hmm. night with the lights out. That's fairly intimate.
Right.
Now, we're even worse than that. We're in your earbuds.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. After I really started getting into this for Neil, I started getting fan mail. And that was kind of a weird thing. Like, oh. it's cool, but it's still weird. And
I've got to ask.
Yeah.
Because Margot got a lot of these.
Uh-huh.
How many marriage proposals?
None yet.
Margot got dozens.
But I will tell you.
Yes.
Some of the things that people do say, there was a gentleman who said he works on an island that has no electricity, no running water, and he saves his battery on his iPod so that he can listen to me read to him at night when everything is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me pictures of this paradise in Mexico, and it was just, it was beautiful. And I was having that impact and being that in those places with those people, even if it's a recording, is really like, just, it's amazing to me.
Well, the thing about Adler, when Margo Adler did Hour of the Wolf, she, and this was, I think, the best live radio I've ever heard, okay? And Margo has a way about her, aside from being a brilliant journalist and one of the students out of the free speech movement at Berkeley, member of the Vinnie Sarama's brigade. She pretty much introduced witchcraft, paganism, to America with her book Drawing Down the Moon.
Okay.
And she's considered the queen of Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the granddaughter of Alfred Adler, as in Freud, Adler, and Young. And she's the producer of All Things Considered. Boring, boring.
NPR,
and
whatever.
And she would go, oh no, but BAI in the early 70s, she would get to this mic. And she could be so intimate.
Oh, yeah.
And she has a wonderful voice.
Absolutely.
And at 5 a.m., she was mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was usually her engineer. I was, everybody had a gopher. I was like, you know, hers. And she and I would sit together, you know, for hours before Hour of the Wolf began at 5 a.m. And she would say, "Hey, Freund, I'm going to tell you something. Mm-hmm. But if you ever tell a soul, I will never speak to you again."
And you're about to tell everybody.
And then
on
she
the radio.
And then she goes on the air and she tells the same story.
Okay. I was going to say, no, don't do it.
She was that intimate. She was that intimate with her microphone. And therefore that intimate in many people's living rooms or bedrooms.
Right.
She got proposed to, and that's a polite word. Some of them were actual proposals, some of them were propositions.
Wow.
And she's got a great voice.
I did have a review from Australia that said, "I wish Kate Baker would stop sexing up the mic."
Oh my God, that person had issues.
Oh. I think I should do that more often.
Depends on the style microphone.
Yeah.
I mean, those old RF50s, Electrovoice RF50s, they are, you cannot show one on television, I think, or you'd
really
be arrested for obscenity.
Yeah,
oh, they just had a, we used to have those. We used to have those in the control room. And they were on these really cheap mic stands. We have these spring-based mic stands.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have a woman guest, or any guest, who would come in, and the mic, I'd set the mic, and it would just start drooping and going down and down and down. And
until somebody leaned in really close.
Yes, and I was good. I did not pick up the camera phone. But one asked me, oh, I believe this was Mary Robinette Kowal. And she said, "How do I fix this?" Because she knows Mike. She's a professional.
Right.
I said, "Viagra." That was almost the end of the show. Don't bleep around with Mary Robinette Kowal.
Oh, no, no. She actually, can I give a shout out to her? Because she she gave me the job I have at Clark's World. She was...
Really?
When Neil was first starting to do audio, he was having the authors read in most cases.
Go back a little. Let's...
Okay, so when...
Let's tell some of the history. I've been mouthing off for an hour.
So he started the magazine, and it consisted of, I want to say it was like one story, and then he brought in podcasts a little bit later on from the inception of the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And he had people like Mike Allen read, Mary, I think Kat Rambo read a couple stories as well. And then...
I've never read Mike Allen has read poetry.
Right.
He's a fantastic
narrator.
That I have recorded, actually, at cons. He's never been on the show, but I get him every reader con.
Right.
Yeah. 2 weeks?
It is 2 weeks.
Yeah.
No. Is it?
It's close.
It is. It's more like 2.5.
It's July 9th.
Yes.
Or rather, I'll be traveling up July 9th.
It's a great convention.
Which is Wednesday. It is the convention. You can take your world cons. You can take all that. ReaderCon says it all.
I have a special spot for Boscone because that was my first convention.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back into sci-fi.
Well, always your first.
Yeah.
But, I haven't been to a Boston convention outside of ReaderCon since 1982.
Go back to Boscone. It's really good.
I should. Well, I have a question about that off air.
Okay. So I was talking to Mary because I knew that Mary was doing narrations, and I was corresponding with her via email, and for some reason she couldn't get a story to Neil. I think she was at a convention herself, and Neil had asked her if she knew anybody, and so first came to mind was me, and I almost lost the whole Clark's World thing because Neil was like, how much do you want for a 24-hour turnover? And I'm like, $300, because I had no idea. It was my first paying gig.
24-hour turnover is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Do you edit yourself?
I do.
Okay.
So he's like, well, that's a little bit out of the budget range. And I'm like, oh, crap, I lost the job. And then I wrote him back and I said, what would work for you? And then we came to an arrangement and I started narrating regularly until I met him in person at LunaCon.
Mm-hmm.
And then we...
Which is still... not a sucky convention. It tries to be, but it's still a lot of fun.
It's a fun convention in this area.
Yeah, LunaCon and PhilCon are sort of like, you know, they used to be great and now they're sort of down on their feet. Sort of like BAI, but you know, BAI is still.
That's
good
an
to
opportunity
listen to.
To build it back up to where you need to be, though.
Exactly.
Start expanding programming to new media and all these.
And LunaCon is starting to.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have a new program person, Sol Jaffe, is taking over as con chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I met him online in like 1980.
Right.
When when he ran like 1/6 of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Or Usenet, wow. Anyway.
Yeah.
Before the web. Yes, there was a time before the web.
BBSs?
Well, this was actually Usenet, mm-hmm. which is the internet equivalent of a BBS.
Mm-hmm.
And still there, by the way.
Right.
Usenet is still at the bottom core of its the
There's messaging. Some people still hanging on, right?
Oh, there are well
many people hanging on.
There are well over 100,000 people.
Many people, yeah.
About as many people as there were in the early 80s are mm-hmm. still there today.
Right.
And there's rec.arts.sf.whatever, and one of the first people I ever met online there was a guy calling himself Uncle Orson. His daughter,
really?
We mentioned earlier,
yes.
Who as once upon a time as a person was somebody really looked up to. He was on this show the day he won the Nebula for Speaker for the Dead.
Really?
One of my favorite novels. And he was a great guy. And I have a different feeling today. And let's leave it there.
Let's leave it there. So, getting back to the story, So Neil and I actually got to spend a little bit more time together at the Montreal Worldcon, which was, I believe, my first Worldcon, where he asked me to be on staff at the magazine. And we started slowly expanding the line of fiction, so where it went from one story and now we do five. And now I think with the Patreon level of subscriptions, we just hit the $500 mark. So thank you, listeners, if you're listening out there.
And similar to the concept of listener-sponsored radio, and there it is.
Yeah.
It's out there. You can read it for free, but if you believe in this thing...
Absolutely. Support us. Right.
You're supposed to support
right.
Clark's World.
And it's a dollar, you know? It's a dollar to however the amount of money you want to give to say, hey, I really enjoy what you're doing, and please, let's sustain this,
because,
right?
Because Clark's World, you told me off-air, has just moved... to paying professional rates. So it went from semi-prosine to prosine.
Well, so here's the difference. Oh. So we've always paid CIFWA professional rates. We've actually exceeded that for quite a while.
Yeah.
We're at 10 cents a word, I think.
Yeah, which sounds like nothing, but it's actually, for science fiction, it's pretty
more than
good.
Double a lot of other places out
when
there.
When I was
so.
At Galaxy Magazine,
yeah.
I worked for Jim Bain at Galaxy Magazine, mm-hmm. we were 3 cents a word and paying more than a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to be a writer, you're not going to make a living at it. there's not like the 1%.
You have to do novels.
You have to,
so if you write writing. Novels, short story writing.
Short story writing buys you an ice cream. But it's
maybe.
Fun. Maybe. You got to settle the right place.
Yeah.
So we just hit the $500 mark on Patreon, which gives us another story every other month. So that's going to be added on to the workload.
Oh.
So we're going to be up to 6 stories every other month. We do 3 right now that are original fiction, and then 2 reprints that are handled by Gardner Dozois.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a powerhouse.
And for
it's
those
punch,
who don't know,
right?
Gardner Dozois is, you know, he was editor for, what, 17 years?
Oh, yeah.
Of Asimov's magazine. He's a wonderful writer.
Mm-hmm.
On his own.
And you Game of Thrones fans, he's very, very tight with George R. R. Martin, and they put together some lovely anthologies together.
The Wild Cards books are great. But George used to live here. George used to be on this show a lot. I can't watch, I can't read Fire and Ice, I can't watch Game of Thrones. I don't like gore.
Oh, it's gory, but it's really well done.
It's doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's like saying, yeah, well, it's sex on camera, but it's really well done. And I have seen people use words that I have tried to promote. It's gornography.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it's HBO.
I mean, yes.
At least the visual aspect of it. I mean, HBO is going to take it and do as much as they possibly can.
Yeah, but they actually work to try to shock people who are unshockable.
Right.
And, you know, I really don't need to see what happens when a spare starts to enter somebody's eye.
Yeah.
And then I don't need to see arterial spurting.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not horror, it's not violence that I object to. It's I don't need to actually see the results of the gore.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad enough in a Quentin Tarantino movie, and that I can
yes.
You know.
I would agree with that.
And this transcends that.
Well, did you hear the hubbub with the, I think it was like 2 episodes before the finale, they had the big battle between the Mountain and, I can't remember the name of the character, I want to say Oberyn. No, that's not right, but anyway, so.
I call him Peter Dinklage and
actor. He takes him and he's, the Mountain's got him down on the ground, he's pushing in his eyeballs and then like his skull collapses and they actually show
it.
I was like, did they need to do that, or could have they
and
done like an Alfred Hitchcock type of direction where it was like, why is that necessary?
There was a short
it's a shock
story
factor.
About mystery.
Mm-hmm.
It's about some people that own a hotel resort on a planet. And the planet is misty, and you cannot see below. And there are rumors about it, and as long as it's rumor, everybody is intrigued. France. Everybody loves this place and goes to it. And then finally, the mist fall clears. Mm-hmm. This is a Nebula Award-winning story.
Okay.
And it's discovered there are some things down there and all this, but the mystery is gone. And the name of the story is With Morning Comes Mistfall by George R. R. Martin. And it's one of his best stories. I love that story. Mm-hmm. And it is exactly that kind of thing that makes me not, that makes Game of Thrones not my taste. I'm not saying it's bad.
Mm-hmm. It is, it's very brutal. It's very brutal. And it, there are...
Brutal? But no, Clockwork Orange is brutal. I can watch it. AI is brutal. Kubrick again. Proto-Kubrick.
Yeah.
I can watch it. But the on-camera brutality, the let's get that camera really in close there and make this not look like a special effect so that people can, you know, so that you know what it looks like when this horrible, horrible thing.
I'll just watch Mythbusters. They use gel dummies.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, for me, that's bad enough.
Right.
You know, those two guys. But I like Mythbusters.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, it's just, I don't care for that level. I like horror.
I can't do horror. And getting back to the narration part of it,
by
though,
horror, I mean The Haunting is one of the best horror movies ever made.
Okay. Did you see the U.S. version of The Ring? That movie screwed me up for days.
Okay.
I was looking at myself in
pictures,
and I was like, am I all screwed up now? Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I won't.
No, it wasn't... I think it was more Hitchcockian, if I'm remembering it correctly. I've saw it a couple years ago.
Well, I have issues with Psycho, and there's nothing in Psycho.
Right, right. It was very... It caught you on the guttural level.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it affected me for a couple days. And I don't really like horror movies, but...
Watch The Haunting.
Watch The Haunting.
Okay. Watch The Haunting.
Right.
Based on The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson.
Right.
And, oh, Claire Bloom.
Sorry, Ellen Datlow.
Oh, wow. She has sat in the seat where you are any number of times, and we have had this discussion often. And she is the one who convinced me that I do like horror.
Right.
And she won the argument. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't like horror. I said, define horror. She says something that is horrifying is horror.
Mm-hmm.
And on that definition, I can accept it.
Right.
But I say, yeah, but what about, you know, this thing and that thing? And she's, and ghost stories don't do that. And these stories don't. They are horror. Lovecraft is horror. Robert Bloch is horror. Mm-hmm. The Hellbound Train. Richard Matheson.
Oh, yeah.
Nightmare 20,000 Feet is horror.
It's the anxiety, I think, you know, of, you know, something's going to happen and you're powerless to stop it and you're along for the ride.
Yeah.
And I think some people have a better time of handling that than others.
Yeah, I mean, I won't see Drag Me to Hell, which is Sam Raimi's film.
Yeah.
I won't do those.
It got rave reviews.
Yes, it did. A lot of horror movies are very, very well made.
Right.
A good friend of mine, a BAI person, was good friends with David Cronenberg.
Mm-hmm.
But, and John Carpenter, for that matter.
Right.
Now, I like...
The thing.
But I do not like to watch John Carpenter's version, because as brilliant as it is, and it is brilliant, I don't need to see somebody's leg separated from the ankles with the blood dripping from it.
See, but here's the difference. I didn't see that when I was younger. I had to prepare that for the Peter Watts story that he did for Clark's World.
Yeah.
Called The Things,
yes.
Where it was from The Things' perspective.
A very clever story.
It was awesome. I heard him
Peter
read
Watt
it.
Peter Watt is a fine writer, listeners.
He is. Go check out Blindsight. It's one of his best novels. And then the Starfish novels are amazing.
I have not read those. I have
They're
to.
Really great. They're really bleak, though. So if you're not into, you know... wanting to cut your wrists at the end of a book.
Depends on what I'm reading.
Yeah. And the mood.
The mood is what I mean.
But no, so I heard him read the story before he had sold it at Montreal at the Worldcon. I told Neil, I said, you have to buy the story. And we did. And so I prepared myself by going back and watching the Carpenter version. And I felt that the special effects the Carpenter used were... at its time, probably the best that there were.
You know who designed a lot of the special effects? Uncredited. Like from Escape from New York.
Okay.
Followed by the name...
You're going to say his name, and I probably know it.
Oh, you know the name.
Yeah, yeah.
John... not Carpenter. James Cameron.
James Cameron! Holy crap, really?
Holy crap, really.
Wow, okay.
Uncredited, but, you know, he did minor things.
Mm-hmm.
He interned, basically, for a lot of directors who knew just WTF they were doing.
Right.
And John Carpenter is one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite John Carpenter movie is his first. And now I'm blanking on it. It's a comedy, basically. He made it in college.
Okay.
And then he remade it with a budget, just like George Lucas made THX 1138 in college and then remade it. It's the alien is a beach ball. It's running through the space, wreaking havoc.
That one.
Oh, it's wonderful. A wonderful movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it has its, well, not exactly horror moments, but not everybody survives. Actually, I don't think anybody survives. But it's funny.
Yeah.
It's a comedy. It's very, you know, like one guy, just he joins the Pleiades. He joins a meteor shower. He becomes a meteor, and he joins the meteor shower. That's how he dies. It's Ray Bradbury's Kaleidoscope, Inside Out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I respect what Wes Craven and John Carpenter and some of the better, and this radio show is named after a horror movie, Hour of the Wolf. Oh, who directed that film? God, by the name of Ingmar Bergman. But nobody knows the film Hour of the Wolf. You know Bergman. Yeah. I can see from when I said it, you're going, And he made a movie called Hour of the Wolf. Mm-hmm. This radio show is named after it. And it has vampires, and it has,
Are they glittery? They're not glittery.
They don't glitter.
All right, good.
They don't, it's a black and white film.
Okay.
It's Max von Sydow and Liv Ullmann.
Oh, Max von Sydow.
1967.
Mm-hmm.
When they were each in all of their glory. Everybody but the two of them are throwaway characters, seen only briefly. But it starts, you know, with the Hour of the Wolf is the time when children are born and dreams are affected. Is the hour between night and dawn.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Hour of the Wolf.
It's the hour when children who are born are eaten by wolves?
No.
Okay.
No. It's when it's when children are born and when people die.
Yeah.
And all that. I've got the sound right behind me. I'm not going to do it, though.
No.
Because it's the trailer. It's the trailer of the film. Mm-hmm. It runs about 3 minutes.
Oh, gotcha.
Explains all about what Hour of the Wolf is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating Swedish legend.
Hmm.
Mike Straczynski got it all wrong on Babylon 5 with an episode called Hour of the Wolf, Season 4, Episode 1. And he has Ivana... It's just entirely the wrong thing. And I was once explaining to... I had a guest on the air who was trying to explain it to one Veronica Sheamus.
Mm-hmm.
What would she know? She's a professor of folklore.
I'm familiar.
But I have to tell them. I have to tell the mic. And...
high cab drivers.
Yes. And Veronica... And I say it's the Swedish folklore. Legend, maybe about 1500 years old, and she said, no, it's nothing like it. It's about 1200 years old, and Sweden didn't exist. It was just Norwegian and Sweden, and what became Finland,
right,
and Iceland. Well, and what it's really about, and I'm just sitting there going, wow.
Well, there's a perfect segue. You know, we were talking about intimacy, we're talking about horror. You know, that I think when somebody's whispering a story into your ear, your imagination takes over, right? So it can be a far more terrifying experience listening to somebody tell you that.
People, let me tell you, Cage Baker does better special effects than all of LucasArts and Industrial Light and Magic. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Very simple. You go to the microphone and you say, close your eyes and imagine a beautiful planet.
Mm.
Well, you've just outdone everybody. No CGI.
Right.
No CGI.
I got the lowest budget in history.
It doesn't. Well, no, I have. I'm unpaid, totally, for this. But that's my point. And I had a promo for this show where George Lucas added to that, saying they do better special effects. This is why Lucas... Arts produces some of the best sound design in the world. Ben Burtt, who created R2-D2 and all of those, and does everything for Pixar, all the sound effects. He is Wall-E.
Right.
And Wall-E. No, I couldn't quite do it there. He's worked on tons of stuff, and Lucas does the sound almost before he does the storyboards, or about at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what it's going to sound like, and that's part of the magic of both Pixar, which came out of Lucas,
right,
and the Lucas films.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant sound.
Right.
But because he knows the power of sound, and closing your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
One person's image of a beautiful planet will be different than somebody else's.
Oh, yeah.
So you can't get better than your mind's eye.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is what we here at WBAI, under Baird Stirls, used to call the mind's eye theater.
It's a perfect name.
Yeah.
And a perfect concept.
Yeah, because Spirit Circles. Mm-hmm. That was the show Delaney and all those people were working on, the Mind's mm-hmm. Eye Theater. So you see, you do better special effects.
Well, I appreciate that.
And especially because you sell it. You tell the story. And what Kate does, and my guest again is Kate Baker, here on WBAI New York, on Howard the Wolf. I am Jim Freund. Have to do that every so often. Kate is the, you would say, narrator. I would say host and
Well, I actually, I introduce myself as host and narrator.
Yes.
But that might change if Neil keeps adding more stories, because my...
You can only do so much.
I can only do so much, so you might be hearing the voices on the mm-hmm. on the podcast.
Would you then would you be producing those?
I would be producing them.
Okay, so.
So I would still be the host.
You would be demoted to producer. I'm a producer, you see. So.
Yeah, well, Neil keeps piling on responsibility, so
actually, my title for Lightspeed is podcast producer.
Producer.
Although that's really wrong. I'm the podcast editor mm-hmm. is what I am.
Well, director?
No.
No?
No, they have directors. Okay. There's a woman whose name I don't even know, but I hear her whenever I'm editing the stories. Mm-hmm. And she directs
They do three. Studio?
They're studio.
They're studio, okay.
How do you record?
I have a TARDIS.
They have a TARDIS as well. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know that was actually a name that multiple people used.
Well, I went away on a camping trip one day, and my brother knew that I was a huge Doctor Who fan, and I came home from the airport. Huh?
No.
No. Which doctor?
I met the witch doctor. He told
witch
me
doctor.
What to
yeah.
do. Sorry.
No, I imprinted it on Matt Smith, because I could not get into Doctor Who for the longest time, and then this will tell you the...
I started with Tom Baker.
Yeah, I know. But no, I was sitting home on a wonderful
Saturday
night.
I took a picture
of
your wonderful TARDIS dress during Book Expo.
There you go. I was sitting home on a Saturday night, and I just happened to be clicking by BBC America, and there was Matt Smith in the premiere episode of Doctor Who. You know,
which is great.
The 11th Doctor. It was a fantastic. It sucked me in immediately.
Called the 11th
Hour.
Yeah, is the name of that episode.
I know a lot of people have a lot of criticism because he took over for Tennant, and Tennant was like, you know, the Shakespearean Doctor. You know, blah blah blah. But I can appreciate
some
that.
Of the David Tennant episodes are pretty childish.
Yeah, but that's the Doctor.
Yes. You see, the problem is, would somebody please open the door for this weird-looking guy whose show is on next? Don't worry, he's harmless. Well, no, he's not harmless. He's Lister. Anyway, and we have to tell people, stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers. This time, you are going to keep the clothes on until we are all out of the studio. First show I do in this time slot. Rick Bowes is my guest. He starts unclothing, and Rick is just like, wow, he's the god of love. The next week, I have Nora Jemison, and she was just like, you know, getting out her camera. She loved it.
Oh, I would totally Instagram that or Twitter that.
You remember it, Nora. Yeah. Yeah, but better known to the world as N.K. Jemison.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best writers out there. But anyway.
So, getting back to the whole TARDIS thing.
Yes.
What
is the TARDIS in which you record?
Okay, so I came home. I smell the scent of fresh wood. And the girls are laughing in the backseat because they know what's going on. And I go into my office where I recorded. And it was, before then, a sheet. You know, a sheet was keeping all the sound in.
Which is what I do.
Right.
I use a blanket.
Right. And there, behold... Underneath the stairs is my little cupboard under the stairs. It's my brand new, brilliant blue TARDIS recording booth. It was soundproofed. It had the decals on it.
So it's actually built to be a booth,
yeah.
Because that's what they call it at Skyboat Media.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I work with, they have a couple of studios. One is called B-Man. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is called TARDIS. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Right. No, but that's what I recorded, and it's fantastic. I mean, I put my laptop out so you don't get the background noise of the
fans. So
you're
recording on computer.
I do. I record on a computer, yeah. And I edit in Logic Pro on the Mac because I find it's the easiest and the best.
The one that works for you is the best one there.
Right.
A lot of the AI people use, what's the one you use?
Audacity.
Audacity.
Mm-hmm.
And I use Sony SoundForge.
There you go.
Because, which is very, very expensive.
Don't you have a free license or something?
I did tell you that I wrote software reviews for a living.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, well, I make
there
sure that Sonic Foundry SoundForge, before Sony bought it,
right,
is the license I have, and Sony honors it and keeps updating me.
Perfect.
So, and I'm very happy with it. I like Audacity, but I have this really great expensive software, and I'm a PC, I'm not a Mac, so I wish there were something for Chrome. Oh, God, do I wish there was something professional for Chrome, because my favorite operating system is Chrome, which you can use on a Mac, a PC, or a Chromebook.
Right.
And it's cheap. Anyway, I record on a little, and I think you've seen it, a little Zoom
recorder. Yeah, I remember that.
And it's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
It's really lovely.
You get the bassy sound?
You can adjust it.
You can. I guess you can do that in post-production, right?
You can do it in post, but you can do it on the mic.
Uh-huh.
With the H2N or the H4N, you can, and there are preset EQs and stuff, but there is binaural mode in which you can sit across from me, and there is conference mode in which four mics are working at once, and there's podcast mode, which uses three mics, one directly at you, and then two on the side, which determine how much of the cardioid shape, the heart shape, that you're going to include in there.
Well, it was interesting. I started off
It records on an SD card.
There you go. I started on a USB mic that didn't have any sort of filtering or anything, and it sounded like I was talking in a wind tunnel. Yeah. And then I upgraded to the Snowball, which we call the Death Star.
Right.
And then I'm now doing the Yeti Pro, which has the connectors if you wanted to plug it into a mixer.
Yeah, John Allen Simon, director of Radio Free Albemuth, was just, I'd never heard of the Yeti Pro.
Oh, it's a beautiful mic. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, he said it's very skiffy, meaning sci-fi.
It is.
Well, these are all good. I like and recommend the Zoom also for pricing. The price on Zoom 2 is well under $200.
Right.
And it's close enough.
Yeah, the Yeti Pro runs, I think, $189, I think, if you find it.
Is actually less.
It is?
Yeah.
Yeah. You but can get the regular Yeti for $99 or $110 somewhere around there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I also do is there is a website for non-commercial producers. Oh, my God. We've got two minutes left. Thank you. We'll take a couple. We'll take a couple, Lister. Thank you. We're easy here.
This is great.
Yeah. Welcome to WBAI. We're fun. And he's great. Lister is wonderful. I mean, he plays music that I wouldn't listen to, this guy. And then I hear him playing a ska version.
I love ska.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite.
The benefit of Mr. Kite.
Well, not the way he does it.
On trampoline.
Now, did you produce that?
No,
a friend of yours did that. Lister was a producer for Island Records on Haiti. Outside of that, another boring kind of guy.
Wow.
Which is why I tell people, I don't care who you are, stay tuned. It may not be offhand your culture, but you're going to want to listen to the show every week.
Yeah, I love that stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's got the show.
Do you ever fall asleep on air, though? Like, just...
Okay, sorry, you got me on a story. As far as I know, I'm the only person who has ever fallen asleep on live radio.
Oh, no.
I was taking a listener call. I was up for like 36 hours, and this sonorous guy was going on about, this thing, man, and that thing, man, and all that. And a second later, he said, Jim, I just hear, Jim, are you there? And I said, oh, yes, sorry, I was just taking a transmitter reading over there. And he said, do you always snore when you take a transmitter reading?
You should have borrowed from Ellen DeGeneres, who, like, loses conversation threads, and then she says, you know, just followed up with, have you seen Gloria Estefan's hair?
That's not just in Finding Nemo. This is who she is.
This is who she is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Doesn't Gloria Estefan look fabulous?
The bottom line, we need to do this again. If we have to do it by phone, we'll do it.
Absolutely.
By phone.
No, I don't mind driving down here. It's fun, and the girls are...
Are you having a decent time, actually?
She looks tired.
I can't imagine. It's only 3 a.m. Why would anybody be tired at this time? Well, as I said, I fell asleep on the air. It was about 3 a.m. I was doing a midnight to 5. And, yeah, I actually did that. I think that's a first. I've heard a lot of stories of people cursing on the air accidentally and not knowing what they were saying. Mm-hmm. I actually... snored. I actually is how I found out I snore. There is a lot of great audio science fiction out there.
Yes.
There was a time when it was me. Mm-hmm. And I was okay. I will not say I was great, but I was basically upset that Baird Searles had left WBAI. Mm-hmm. But I still knew the people he knew.
Right.
Like Harlan Ellison, mm-hmm. who was a great reader.
Actually never heard him read before.
There's another one.
He's a great one.
Oh, no, he's brilliant.
Is he?
He is brilliant. There's a story that he does.
I could see his personality would come out in any sort
of... Oh, God. And he does voices. Awesome. He studied with Lenny Bruce. He knew Lenny Bruce.
Okay.
And he does the voices. He does the characters. Mm-hmm. And and he is a character. Mm-hmm. Insufferable, but a character. You listening? I know you will hear about this, and I know that I will hear from you, because that's how it works, Harlan. I liked it when you lived in New York, man. Anyway. Sherman Oaks. Ah! Kate.
Yes.
We barely got started.
I know. They went by way too fast, but...
It does.
It was
does.
Always a pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We will do this again.
Absolutely.
But
yes.
People can go to Clark's World Magazine.
That's Clark with an E.
Clarkeswold
magazine.com.
Yes. If you don't know how to spell magazine, they don't want you. No, that's not fair. I can't pull that out because it's actually my keychain that's going to play the outro music. So don't let me leave here without that. Okay. And we go out as always with Steel Ice Pan with Sails of Silver. And thank you, Kate Baker, for being here. To find out more about Kate Baker, clarksworldmagazine.com.
Yeah, all the information on there is...
Yeah, for professional information about all this, check out sfwa.org, mm-hmm. Which is worth knowing about on many levels.
Absolutely, especially if you're a burgeoning writer,
yeah.
Or a professionally sold writer.
And you can become you can join in conversation on the Hour of the Wolf group at Facebook.
Excellent.
And there's a website, but it's going to undergo major, it looks like mid-90s, which it is. But there's an Hour of the Wolf group, there's the New York Review of Science Fiction group, or you can just friend.
There you go.
Jim Freund. So, thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks, listeners, for being there. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I will be back next week, probably with an interview I just conducted yesterday with John Allen Simon, director and author of the movie Radio Free Albemuth, based on the novel by Philip K. Dick. So stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers with the more than generous Lister, and be nice to each other, as Stephen Fry says.
Yeah. She may be real, and young girls.